Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and today we're discussing Season 2, Episode 4 of JLU, Task Force X, which if you know your comics means we're talking about the Suicide Squad. I'm sure even Cartoon Network wouldn't have let Bruce Timm and company call this episode that. So let's go to the Watchtower Files for some background on the DCU's most famous covert ops team.
Watchtower Files.
Task Force X, the Suicide Squad, debuted in the Brave and the Bold number 25, August-September 1959, courtesy of writer-editor Robert Kaniger, penciler Ross Andrew, and inker Mike Esposito, who were also the creative team on Wonder Woman at the time. Brave and the Bold was then one of two tryout titles, along with Showcase, which DC used to test the potential for a new strip to carry its own series. It should be noted, the strip on the cover was called Task Force X, The Suicide Squad. Interestingly, thanks to the comics code, words like horror and terror were verboten on comic covers, but apparently suicide was okay.
Verboten. I like that word.
Yeah.
Verboten.
It's like Vermin Wunderbar.
Yes. Wunderbar.
Yeah.
The squad consisted of Air Force Colonel Rick Flagg, flight medic Karen Grace, physicist Jess Bright, and astronomer Hugh Evans. The team earned their name for bravely facing unique perils others wouldn't dare.
In their debut issue, Task Force X was activated by the U.S. military to investigate and stop a wave of fire and heat coming from the ocean. Operating from their flying laboratory, the squad faced threats from giant cyclops, dinosaurs, and enemy agents. Their first three-issue trial in Brave and the Bold ended in issue number 27. The next issue, some team you may have heard of debuted there, the Justice League of America.
I think I know who that might be, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, kind of, yeah.
The feature got three-issue trial in Brave and the Bold number 37, 38, and 39 2 years later. But despite this, no ongoing series or regular feature followed. Kaniger wouldn't let the name die, creating a suicide squadron to battle the prehistoric creatures on Dinosaur Island in his War That Time Forgot series in Star Spangled Comets, which ran from 1960 to 68.
Over 20 years later, Rick Flagg resurfaced as a member of the loosely organized Forgotten Heroes, who aided Superman in several issues of Action Comics and DC Comics Presents in 1983 and 1984.
In the post-crisis DC universe, the Suicide Squad concept was revived by writer John Ostrander with a new twist. In the third issue of the Legends miniseries, January of 87, scripted by Lynn Wein with art by John Byrne and Carl Kessel, newly introduced government operative Amanda Waller, kind of know her, organized a group of super criminals under the field command of Rick Flagg and sent them out to stop the monstrous Brimstone in return for reductions on their sentences. If they tried to escape or got out of line, they each wore an explosive bracelet that would kill or maim them instantly.
The initial team consisted of Flagg, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, Bronze Tiger, the Enchantress, and Blockbuster. The team succeeded in defeating Brimstone, but Blockbuster didn't survive.
The squad's history was spotlighted in Secret Origins number 14, May of 1987, with Ostrander tying Kaniger's Dinosaur Island stories directly into the squad's past. Rick Flagg's father, Richard Montgomery Flagg, had led the squad, along with his wife and young Rick's mother. The two were killed in action, and Rick eventually formed the Silver Age version of the squad. Jess Bright and Hugh Evans died in action, and Karen Grace suffered a breakdown as a result. Rick's time with the Forgotten Heroes was as a covert insert by the government. In this issue, Waller gets approval from President Ronald Reagan to continue the squad.
Ostrander launched the Suicide Squad as an ongoing series with a cover date of May 1987, with artist Luke McDonald, who had recently wrapped up the original Justice League of America run. The surviving team from Legends returned along with Plastique, Mindboggler, Nemesis, and Nightshade. A recovered Karen Grace returned as team medic.
Mindboggler dies in the second issue, establishing that the title's name was no joke. Many villains and heroes moved in and out of the squad over the series run, including Count Vertigo, Dr. Light, Poison Ivy, Punch and Julie, Shade the Changing Man, Vixen, Mark Shaw Manhunter, and Duchess, secretly the female fury known as Lashina.
The Suicide Squad ran afoul of the newly revived Justice League in a crossover in issue number 13 of both Suicide Squad and Justice League International, cover dated May 1988.
Ostrander's wife Kim Yale began co-writing the series with issue number 23, January of 89, which introduced the mysterious Oracle. Her secret identity would eventually be revealed to be the none other than the former Batgirl Barbara Gordon in issue number 38, February of 1990.
The series was popular with both fans and critics, and spin-off series such as Checkmate, Manhunter, and a Deadshot miniseries launched during the run. The squad appeared in other DC books, particularly those written by Ostrander, such as Firestorm.
The series eventually came to an end with issue number 66, June of 92. The concept and series have been revived multiple times over the years, but it's the Ostrander version that is still considered the standard, with some of the team, particularly Waller, Flag, and Deadshot, being involved almost every time the series is relaunched.
Of course, the squad has enjoyed mainstream media exposure, mostly from the two live-action films, Suicide Squad, directed by David Ayer in 2016, and The Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn, 2021. Waller and Flag figured heavily in both films, and Deadshot and Boomerang were prominent in the first. Of course, the spotlight was mostly stolen by Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, a character inserted front and center of many comic and media adaptations of the team for the past 15 years or so.
After several appearances in other DC-related video games, the squad are soon to be stars of their own game, Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, coming in May of 23.
The original version of the Suicide Squad, Flag, Grace, Bright, and Evans were prominent players in Darwin Cook's masterpiece comic miniseries, DC The New Frontier. This, of course, was later adapted into an animated movie, Justice League The New Frontier. Remember that name, folks, Darwin Cook. Because Task Force X originally aired May 21st, 2005, story by Dwayne McDuffie, of course, teleplay by
Darwin Cook.
Yes. Directed by Joaquin Dos Santos with music by Christopher Carter. In our voice cast, we had Phil Lamar as Green Lantern, Carl Lumley as John Jones, Michael Rosenbaum, not as The Flash, but as Deadshot, Adam Baldwin as Rick Flagg, Juliet Landau as Plastique, Donald Gibson as Captain Boomerang, Alan Rachins as Clock King, CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller, Chris Cox as Captain Atom, and Jamie Alcroft as Vance.
Colonel Rick Flagg interrupts Floyd Lawton, a.k.a. Deadshot's, trip to the gas chamber. He has a mission for Lawton in exchange for saving him from the death penalty. Help infiltrate the Justice League Watchtower. Flagg informs Lawton that explosive nanites were slipped into his last meal, so if he tries to escape, he'll be killed. He takes him to an abandoned LexCorp warehouse to meet with the rest of his Task Force X team of assembled supervillains, each with a set of skills needed for the task. Captain Boomerang, expert thief and inventor. Clock King, planner, tactician, an expert with locks and systems infiltration. And Plastique, explosives expert. Deadshot and Plastique immediately take a shine to one another, but Flag and Clock King have no time for banter. They begin breaking down their mission and painstakingly going over the details laid out by Clock King.
The next day, the disguised Task Force X team ambushes four workers scheduled to be beamed to the watchtower. On the station, Flag jams their ID scanners, and the four split up into groups of two, Clock King remaining on Earth, guiding them over earpieces. Plastique sets a bomb on the tower's nuclear reactor, while Deadshot covers her. When it goes off, Boomerang and Flag make it into the League's weapon vault. In amongst the trophies and confiscated weapons from the League's past adventures, they find the package. The Annihilator Automaton, created by Hephaestus for Ares. Flag activates the Annihilator by reading an incantation and then assaulting Boomerang. The rage brings the thing to life.
Jean calls for Captain Atom to absorb the radiation leak as the workers evacuate the station via javelins and transporters. Thinking they are actual crew, Captain Atom inadvertently helps Deadshot and Plastique make it to their rendezvous with their squad mates. While Green Lantern helps with the evacuation, Captain Atom absorbs the radiation and seals the leak. But he tells Jean that the reactor was sabotaged. Racing toward the bridge, the squad runs afoul of Atom Smasher, Vigilante, and Shining Knight, who engage in battle with them. But the squad gets the upper hand with the Annihilator punching Atom Smasher through the bridge doors. But they have to get past Jean before they can make it to the transporter.
Jean makes quick work of the saboteurs, but the Annihilator grabs him and literally rips him in half. He quickly recovers and manages to best the war machine. But Plastique makes him pause, threatening to drop an explosive disc in the mouth of the unconscious Atom Smasher. She begins to do so, but Captain Atom arrives. In their struggle, the disc goes flying, with Deadshot shooting it to give them a distraction. During the confusion over the explosion, the squad beams down, and Jean is unable to track them due to tampering with the console. Plastique is left behind, gravely injured, or possibly worse.
Uh-huh. Amanda Waller and Cadmus's resident sorceress, Talia, arrive at the warehouse to take possession of the Annihilator. Thinking he's free to go, Deadshot attempts to walk out, but Fly gut punches him and informs him he's got 5 years on the force. If he survives, he's free. On the watchtower, Jean learns that a bridge technician named Vance was the leak, giving Cadmus the info they needed to pull off the heist. He confers with Green Lantern, who wonders what they should do with him now. Jean admits he'd like to mind wipe the last few years of his life, but Green Lantern notes that this is a harsh solution. When Jean angrily says he can't trust him, Green Lantern points out that they now can't trust anyone.
Yes, yes. So Bruce Timm said this episode came about because for Cadmus to seem like a real threat to the Justice League, they had to win at least once.
Yeah.
An espionage heist story with the Suicide Squad was the perfect way to do this, even if they had to go with the more sanitized name of Task Force X. Mm. But like we've established, that was the name on the title of the original comic right. book, so, you know. So we start out this episode with a man being taken to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
Again, I know I always say this, but kids cartoon, this was not on during Toonami. This was, it was on later at night, right. on Saturday nights or whatever, but it was still on Cartoon Network proper. So the priest tries to read him his last rites, but he ain't having it. He tells him, if it comforts you, Padre, by all means. So, yeah. This is Floyd Lawton, a.k.a. Deadshot, who we first saw way back in Justice League Season 1's The Enemy Below, who famously rigged up the electrified grate. Which is why we do electricity.
This is evil.
Because Superman got taken out by an electrified sewer grate.
Like a chump.
Like a chump. Deadshot is voiced by Michael Rosenbaum, as we pointed out. After sitting out the entire first season, is getting a lot to do in this season. Rosenbaum based his voice here on Kevin Spacey, which works, but unfortunately now hasn't aged well.
No.
And also, it's kind of odd considering that Kevin Spacey played Lex Luthor in Superman Returns, which came out a year after this. And, of course, Michael Rosenbaum played Lex Luthor on Smallville.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, and I remember there was something, like, one time Michael Rosenbaum, who Michael Rosenbaum has his own podcast, which is really good, of course.
Yeah,
you know, so everybody should listen to that. But he saw Kevin, this was before, of course, Kevin Spacey was put in, you know, Hollywood jail.
Which, rightly so.
Yeah, rightly so. But they saw him out somewhere, and he's like, oh... He said to Rosenbaum, oh, the other Lex Luthor. And Rosenbaum said something like, oh, the old fat Lex Luthor.
Oh, dang. Oof.
So I thought that was, I don't know, that's not the exact quote, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
Look up that story. It's true. At least I paraphrased it, but it is true. So Deadshot was initially a one-off Batman villain introduced in Batman number 59, June-July 1950, created by David V. Reed and Lou Sayre Schwartz. He returned with an updated look during the famous Englehart Rogers Austin run in Detective Comics number 474, December 1977. He goes in and flags in his chair, huh, my chair's already taken. Guess I will have to come back tomorrow. It's just like... Rick Flagg is waiting in the chair with a piece of paper that he hands the warden to release Lawton to him. And I wonder how long it took Flagg to come up with that gag. He's probably like, what's the most badass way I could be waiting for them? Oh, I know, I'll actually sit in a chair.
Yeah.
That's ballsy. You know? Lawton's still being a smart ass with a smile. He says, what if I don't want to go with him? And then you can take your seat, tough guy. I like how, you know, Flagg just, you know, cuts through the bull crap. And the smirk changes to actual fear.
Yeah.
On his face. And it's the one time you can kind of see him kind of cow down in this entire episode. Flagg is voiced by Adam Baldwin, who we've heard before voicing Jonah Hex and Hal Jordan in season one finale episodes. He's probably still best known for Firefly, but has done a lot of voice work for DC animated projects.
Is he part of the whole Baldwin brothers?
I think he's like a cousin or something. Okay. He's not a brother. He's not a brother to Alec and all that bunch. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Lawton asks him, who do you want me to kill? I think in previous shows, maybe even previous seasons, they would have said Ice or maybe Eliminate. But in this episode, they're just like, kill, kill, kill. She calls, Plastique calls him killer.
Yeah.
Through this whole episode. So, I mean.
It's they're aging it. The cartoon is, you know.
Yeah, it's growing up. You know, it's basically, they're like, I think they realized at this point, okay, we're attracting an older audience.
Yeah.
Let's play to them. You know, I kind of wonder that, yeah. When Flag hands him a folder and sees he will be breaking into the Watchtower, he says, "I always wanted to die for my country." This is about as hard-boiled as we've ever gotten, like you said. So, yeah. So they are meeting in a LexCorp warehouse.
Well, like he says, you know, the old tenant had to move out.
Yeah.
You know?
But he said he was really good on security.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like that. Of course, it's probably, you know, lined with lead. Certain Kryptonians can't see through it, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Superman can't see through lead, and Kryptonite will destroy him. That's right. Then Flag introduces Lawton to Task Force X. This is the first time we see the real Captain Boomerang in Eclipsed. An actor was playing the villain in one of Flash's Lightspeed protein bar commercials.
Right, right. Which the protein bars actually come back in this.
Yes, they do. They do. You're right. George Harkness, a.k.a. Captain Boomerang, expert thief and inventor, debuted in Flash number 117, December 1960, in a story by John Broome, Carmine Infantino, and Murphy Anderson. He's voiced here by Donald Gibson, who appeared in a lot of movies with Mel Gibson, like Braveheart, Maverick, and subbed for Gibson as John Smith in Pocahontas 2. So he's a fellow Aussie actor.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so more actors that are, you know, in Hollywood jail nowadays, basically. So, yeah. Yeah. A lot of that going around. After Hugo Strange and Professor Milo, we get another returning BTAS villain, Temple Fugit, a.k.a. the Clock King, planner, tactician, expert with locks and system infiltration. He had previously appeared in the episode The Clock King and the follow-up episode Time Out of Joint on Batman the Animated Series. He is voiced here by original actor Alan Ratjens, best known for L.A. Law and Dharma and Greg.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't he Dharma's dad on Dharma and Greg?
I think so.
Yeah, I think he was. The Clock King's media history is very confusing. Robin had battled a villain called The Clock in several issues of his strip in Star Spangled Comics in the late 1940s, beginning with issue number 70, July 1947. 10 years later, a different clock was shown to have been the villain Batman first tangled with on his very first case in Detective Comics number 265, March 1959. A year later, the Clock King debuted battling Green Arrow and Speedy in World's Finest number 111, August 1960. This was the Clock King who wore the garish green and blue costume festoon with clock faces and a mask with a clock face as well. Despite his infamy, he only made a handful of appearances, returning in Justice League of America number 5 the following year, and then nearly two decades later, two appearances in Green Arrow's late Bronze Age strip in World's Finest 257 and 284. He would go on to be a founding member of the Injustice League, later known as Justice League Antarctica, in JLI number 23, January 1989. So he's a member of the goofy Injustice League.
Oh, okay.
Slash, you know, the Justice League Antarctica. The Batman TV series had their own Clock King, played by actor Walter Slezak, in the two-part story The Clock King's Crazy Crimes and The Clock King Gets Crowned, which is unusual because usually those two-parters rhyme.
Right.
But sometimes they don't. He wore a top hat with a clock on it and a cape, but he didn't resemble the Green Arrow villain at all. So Bruce Timm and the Batman Animated Series crew created their own Clock King just using the name and the vague idea that someone named the Clock or Clock King had battled Batman. The BTAS crew also roped in Green Arrow villain Count Vertigo in that series, but the Arrow TV series mined a lot of Batman lore for that show, so payback is hell.
Mm-hmm.
So basically,
all I have to say, and I will say this, by and large, the Timverse are the best versions of the characters, specifically the best versions of the villains.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean,
I do miss that Clock King doesn't have his little, doesn't have the clocks on his glasses. He doesn't have the hands.
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That he just has, he just looks like a normal guy in a brown suit, which is kind of interesting because I remember Bruce Timm, in the first episode, Clock King, he's in a brown suit and his derby hat,
yeah,
you know, and bowler, whatever you want to call it, and he's just kind of dressed in brown, and Bruce Timm was kind of like, eh, he didn't really look like a supervillain. He really did look like some kind of efficiency expert.
Yeah.
And so when he reappeared, he was dressed in black.
Yeah.
And he had the little, you know, the watch hands on his glasses.
Yeah.
And, but now he's just back to a brown suit and, you know,
yeah,
which is kind of interesting. Yeah. But yeah. The final member is Betty Sands Soucy, a.k.a. Explosives Expert Plastique, who debuted in The Fury of Firestorm number 7, December 1982, created by Jerry Conway and Pat Broderick. She is voiced by Juliet Landau, who voiced Tala last episode and this episode, and who is, again, best known for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the TV series Bosch. Oddly enough, Firestorm doesn't get on Justice League Unlimited, but one of his rogues does.
Yeah.
And we talked about how Firestorm was almost the character in The Greatest Story Never Told, but they switched it for Booster Gold. So, she's very vavoom, and for some reason dressed like a 60s go-go dancer. In short pink dress, gold medallion belt, and white...
ankle boots.
Yeah, ankle boots, yeah. Her hair is red, but short, unlike her usual comic book look.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm just like, that's an interesting, you know, look
Take
for her.
In.
Yeah, so... but there's a lot of redheads in the DCAU, you know.
So, yeah.
There's Barbara... There's Lana Lang, there's Maxima, you know, there's Volcana, there's a lot of redheaded females
yeah.
in the DC, and let's face it, the DCAU version of Lana Lang is freaking Mary Jane Watson.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, she just is, so. Flag introduces her as an explosive expert, and Lawton says, I know, I've seen the pictures, and she responds, and that's all you're going to see, killer. So where did he see these pictures?
I think she was probably like in Playboy or Hustler or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, I get that opinion.
Or there was some kind of, there's some kind of, it makes me wonder if the, I mean, we see that there's like supervillain bars and things like that. Is there like a supervillain like,
well, like
version
I said,
of Playboy?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, yeah. Something like that.
Super Hustler or something. Yeah. It's like, the calculator is the Larry Flint of the...
No.
I don't know. So they start going over the plans, and the criminals are all worried, but Flag tells them there's so much staff, if they don't do anything stupid, they won't be noticed. This is using the unnamed and honestly unexplained staff of workers we began seeing in episode one of this show. It's using that to the enemy's advantage.
Yeah.
So that's a nice touch. I mean, because I remember it's like we've always been like, at least in the first episode, we kind of let it go, but it's like... Who are these people?
Right.
Who pays them?
Right.
Like Bruce Wayne? I mean, did they, you know, do they have...
And why? Why do they need them? You know, why do they need...
Yeah, well, I mean, they're literally running the space station.
I mean, but I'm saying, you know,
I mean,
before they were very insular, and now they're, let's expand out, you know.
Yeah, and they've left themselves open, vulnerable, because now they're, you know, hiring in all these people. But Flag tells them the plan is for Plastique to create a diversion near the Watchtower's nuclear reactor. Her and Deadshot's double entendres continue. Plastique says,
blow up a nuclear reactor? Sweet.
Do I just watch or do I get to join in?
Oh, my.
I mean,
naughty.
I mean, wow. Okay. I mean, there's so much. There's that's so loaded. I mean, it's like maybe he just wants to kind of watch and not join in. You know, so maybe that's his thing. I don't know. It's just like, okay.
I'm so tempted to say something.
Yeah, don't. Boomer and Flag will then make their way to the package and secure it. Captain Boomerang feels like they'll be storming Heaven's Gate, but Clock King assures him he studied their duty schedule and has them coming in at the weakest point in the duty cycle. He says there are only three obstacles, but those obstacles are Captain Atom, Green Lantern, and John Jones.
Yeah, you know.
Because Superman and Wonder Woman aren't going to be there. You know, I'm like, I mean, come on, you know. John is actually referred to as the Martian Manhunter here. I think this is the only time he's called this on screen in this series.
And I think that's because it's other people talking about him,
right.
Not, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, of course
I'm I don't know. I thought Amanda Waller called him the Martian at some point.
Well, they call him the Martian. But not the Martian Manhunter,
oh, okay,
like his comic
okay.
book superhero name.
Okay,
With John's name, I mean, in the original series, it was like John Jones, Manhunter from Mars. Because, you know, in Detective Comics, initially, for the first several years, he never appeared in his Martian form except just occasionally. He was John Jones, detective, and you'd see, like, you know, the head of his Martian self, like when he was thinking or something, would be, like, floating over top of him or something.
Okay.
So, and then eventually... They decided, well, Manhunter for Mars doesn't sound as good as Martian Manhunter, you know, so they kind of, you know, changed it over to that. But, yeah, so. Flag asks Plastique, what would she do if she is setting the charge and is confronted by Superman? And she says,
before or after I change my shorts.
That's funny. I like Plastique's response that she take a hostage and threaten to blow him to Uranus, also loaded. If Big Blue doesn't back off. Flag says, no unnecessary killing.
So that's what gets me. He says no unnecessary killing. Not that killing's unacceptable, just not unnecessarily.
Yeah, the villain's all grown, but he tells them if they kill someone and the body is found, the alarms will sound and they're trapped. And then Clock King says, and if you try to take time to hide the body, then you get off the timetable.
Right.
So do you think Flag's making a moral stance here, or is it just for efficiency?
Well, like I said, I mean, that's one of those cases. He's just kind of like, you know, no unnecessary. He's not against it. He's just...
Well, I think Flag, I mean, he's a military man. He doesn't want to kill anybody. He doesn't want to see any innocent people get killed, but there is so much collateral damage they can accept in a mission, you know? So I think that's his thinking. He's not unfeeling about it, but it's at the same time, it's like, this is the job and we've got to get it done, you know. So I think that's where he's coming from. Deadshot is tired, but Flag tells him plenty of time to sleep in the grave, which is where we could all wind up if one of us misses his mark. They are really building the high tension stakes here. I mean, you know, and these are the bad guys, but you're already feeling like, oh, wow. You know, are these guys going to be able to pull this off?
Right. I mean, in a way, you almost like kind of rooting for them a little bit.
The way they set it up, they do it so well, you know. Yeah.
You know, I mean, not rooting for them, but you know.
No, I get it. You kind of do want to see if they can pull it off. Yeah. The next scene, I think, is very fascinating. A Watchtower crew member is dropped off near a cornfield, presumably by his wife, walks through the corn stalks and joins four other crew members, one of whom is telling a funny story about a guy named Jimmy and Booster Gold's pants. He says, even Big Blue laughed at that one. So, we've talked about these workers. You know, how do they get up there? Well, now we know. Apparently, they drop them off in random, like, secreted spots.
Yeah.
Where they get beamed up.
Like Star Trek.
Yeah. But, I mean, the fact that they have, like, designated... like in somebody's field or something,
yeah.
You know, it's, I think that's funny. It's interesting. It's not really funny, but I think that's interesting. So how would you feel about dropping me off in a cornfield every morning to beam into space?
I'd be like, man, I've got to take time out of my day to go drive out to Boofoo to drop him off. Can't they just get him from the house?
Yeah. I mean, really, why couldn't they just beam them from their house?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point. And then they, you know...
Because, I mean, if you're talking about a security risk...
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Why couldn't they just beam them from their house? Maybe the reason is... I'm thinking this through.
Okay,
they do that. Think about this. The Watchtower is infiltrated in this episode. Bunch of supervillains get on the Watchtower. Then they beam... like the Legion of Doom, into the houses of everybody that works there.
Yeah.
And they kill their families or something.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that's why they don't do it. You know, maybe they go to a neutral place. That way they can't track them back to the people.
But, like, you know, like they said, they've got a schedule, you know, like, they've got four people coming in at one time.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's how this happens.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't know if I ever noticed in previous episodes that the workers all have yellow shield badges on their uniforms. The shield looks a lot like the classic JLA logo from the original series. So, the guy who's dropped off is named Esposito, no doubt in reference to one of the Suicide Squad co-creators.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Esposito, yeah. Surprised they didn't call him Kaniger, you know, honestly, but... Then these poor guys are taken out by trank darts. Thankfully, trank darts, not regular bullets.
Yeah.
which, you know, Deadshot could have been... I'm sure Flag wouldn't want him to do that. But then they're replaced by the squad members who get a timetable update from Clock King.
But here's the thing that I want to know about. You've got these guys coming up, and you have somebody that said, hey, even Big Blue laughed at his joke.
Yeah.
What if they've been working there long enough that he's allowed to talk to Big Blue, wouldn't somebody recognize, hey, that's not John?
If they stuck around long enough and mingled in with the crowd, I think they would have.
Yeah.
But we see them, like, as soon as they get on there, they skirt off to where they're supposed to go.
Mm.
So I think you're right. Flag puts on a pair of glasses as a disguise somewhat. We find out he's got another reason for it. But I thought if he only knew, speaking of Big Blue. But, of course, maybe he does, because Waller knows that Batman is Bruce Wayne. Does she know that Clark Kent is Superman? Or Superman's Clark Kent.
Right.
So, and maybe Flag knows. You know, I don't know. The glasses aren't just for looks, as we said. He uses them to disable the ID scanner when they get on board. And I do like how plastic is in all, but the operator's like, yeah, it's awe-inspiring. Move it, you know, basically. Which he wants to wait for tech support, but Flag name drops that Jean is waiting for them in the guy caves.
Yeah.
And then Boomer apparently set off the metal detector for 75 cents. And they're getting on him about that, you know, as they walk.
75 cents is 75 cents.
Yeah. Later on in the series, Mirror Master tells him, "You bleed poverty." He sure does, you know. Yeah. So we see Stargirl and Vibe in the hallway. In the utility room, Boomer takes off his sleeves to reveal boomerangs underneath. Plastique has a false patch of skin on her stomach covering up explosives. And Deadshot, you brought this up, has components for a ceramic gun hidden in his lunchbox behind Lightspeed bar wrappers.
Yep.
And these are the same bars Flash promoted in Eclipse, as we said. And apparently Michael Rosenbaum digs these Lightspeed bars.
Oh, well, there you go.
Deadshot points out Flag is unarmed, but Boomer says this one don't need no weapons.
Yeah.
So it makes me think that Boomer and Flag have been on missions together before.
Before, yeah.
Yeah, either that or
at least they fought.
Yeah, at least they fought. Maybe Flag brought, you know, I mean, you would think the Flash brought Boomerang in. I mean, even in the Suicide Squad movie, we see the Flash bring Captain Boomerang in, you know. But I love the scene on the elevator. Deadshot and Plastique get on, and as the door shut, a glowing green hand stops him from closing. Of course, it's Green Lantern.
Uh-huh.
He says, "Hey." And Deadshot at first responds, "How you doing?" There's nothing else. Nervous silence. But then Deadshot says, "Excuse me, Mr. Lantern. For 6 weeks now, my wife's been after me for Hot Girl's autograph. You wouldn't know where she's at today, would you?" And Green Lantern very coldly says, "Haven't seen her." "Okay, thanks anyway."
I mean, golly. Twist the knife, man.
Oh, and the whole time, Plastique is looking at him in shocked disbelief, like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?" You know, just like. But Deadshot is having a ball with this. And she's like, "You are a very bad boy." And he says, "Tell me you didn't love it." It's just so.
God.
I guess it's public knowledge that Green Lantern and Hot Girl were a thing.
Yeah, and yeah. Are now not.
Yeah, so. Wow, it's like, you know, it's probably like in all the rag sheets, like the Inquirer.
And Star,
those type of things, yeah. It's probably in the checkout lane, like, "Hot Girl and Green Lantern split up. I still love her, even though she betrayed the world." You know, things like that. Yeah. "Are Green Lantern and Vixen over because Hot Girl's back?" You know, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Boomer and Flag are trying to break into a security area and have to hide because Atom Smasher thumps down the hall. And he's like 12 feet high. Why does he stay that size?
Right.
I mean, I know that Al Rothstein is like, he's tall. He's like 7 foot tall or something.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was like grown.
Yeah.
Walking down the hall. It's like, you know, why didn't he shrink down, you know? So, I gotta say, you know, seeing Atom Smasher... The Black Adam movie wasn't perfect, but I would like to have seen those characters again.
Yeah.
I like the JSA characters they introduced. I did. That's a shame that, you know.
It didn't go over any better.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. They get inside, but Clock King tells them they are 34 seconds behind schedule. This is like a snowman telling Bandit, you know.
Yeah.
"You're about 34 minutes behind schedule, son." You know. Now, if they just got Jerry Reed to be the Clock King, just can you imagine that? "So you better move, because there's a Kojak with a Kodak on, we'll tell you." You know? There's a second door they weren't told about. Like we said, I find myself rooting for these guys.
I know!
This is how good McDuffie and Darwin Cook are. Which we don't, of course they are, but you know. Plastique plants the bomb, but a staff member sees Deadshot with his gun. Luckily, he just knocks him unconscious after he fights with him for a while. There's some
play. And what gets me is she's like, "Quit playing with him. Get it done," you know?
Yeah.
So she knows he can whoop him, you know?
Right.
Or thinks he can.
Yeah. There's some split screens with Clock King coordinating everything. Boomer throws his boomerang while Plastique's detonation goes off, so that way they don't notice that, you know?
Right.
While, you know, they're obviously going to be more worried about the detonation in the reactor. Power goes out, and when it comes back on, they have a core breach. This is the first time we see Jean in this episode, and a blonde technician named Vance. More on him later. Of course, we had the synopsis, so you get what's going on with him. But we then see inside the vault, and there are a lot of Easter eggs.
Yes.
I saw Grodd's helmet. There's tons of Thanagarian weapons from Starcross, Weather Wizard's wand, what looks like the Genesis device controllers from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Okay, you thought so too.
Oh, you did too? Yeah, okay. Okay, and then Hellboy's big demonic hand.
Yeah.
You know, Lex's power suit and his power nullifier gun, which started this whole Cadmus mess, really.
Yeah.
And there are tons of other items there. Now, I could have went through and looked all this up, but we want comments in the comment section at fireandwaterpodcast.com. We haven't had as many comments this season. I love reading your guys' comments. I love commenting back to you on the comments. I like responding to you. Let us know what else you see. I know there's other Easter eggs in there from previous episodes, from Justice League comics probably, from other media like Star Trek and Hellboy are in here, you know. So let us know what you find. And we would love to see what you guys can get out of this scavenger hunt and have a discussion about it. So go to fireandwaterpodcast.com, tell us what you see, or just tell us what you think about this episode.
Hint, hint, subtle, subtle.
Subtle, subtle. Yeah, if you're listening to this, leave us a comment. Then we see what the package is. The Annihilator, first and last seen in last season's most forgettable episode, Hawk and Dove. See, everything counts.
Yes.
Created by the Greek forger Hephaestus by order of Ares to be an instrument of war. Basically, the DC version of the Destroyer Automaton from the Thor comics and the first Thor film.
Yep.
So, the base is on red alert. And we see Gypsy running down the hall as Jean tells the crew to evacuate via the bridge, transporter deck, or the Javelin ships. Interesting that they call these transporters, like on Star Trek, because in the JLA comics, they were almost exclusively called teleporters, I guess, to avoid that direct swipe.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So you teleported down. You didn't transport or beam down. So the sight of all the ships fleeing is kind of scary. I mean, working in space would be freaky enough, and then this happens.
Right.
I mean, you know, and you just dropped off in a cornfield in the morning, and now you've got you're out in deep space and, you know, floating in a little, basically, lifeboat.
Yeah.
You know. Flag reads the incantation to activate the Annihilator, but it doesn't move. Then he slugs Boomerang, who is pretty pissed until he realizes that it takes rage to bring it to life.
Right.
So, being the weasel he is, Boomer wants to leave, but Flag says they are waiting on the rest for at least 3 minutes. So, I like that. So, you know, Flag's willing to, again, I think Flag is willing to be humane to a point.
Right.
But then, the mission. You know, it's, I'll be as humane as the mission lets me be.
As the mission parameters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Deadshot and Plastique are running upstairs, sliding under doors, but they miss one. Then Captain Atom gets his hand under it in time and lets them through. I love that the League is helping these guys and they have no clue.
Right. And I mean, he didn't even question, why are you all here? You know, he's like, just get out of here, you know?
Yeah, well, he's just, I mean, they're running from, you know, potential radiation poisoning.
Right.
Clock King tells him they've used up their pad, and now there's no margin for error. Flag is about to give in to Boomer, but the other two run up, panting just in time. I mean, and they look like they have just ran, like, a marathon.
Yes. Well, think about how many flights that they show,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, that watchtower is just long, you know.
Yeah.
It's like forever long, so. Radiation is going to reach the bridge before the crew is off, so Jean tells Green Lantern to take some of the crew to the annexes. I guess that's those other little floating objects that are around the main watchtower now.
Yeah.
So those are like little annexes for the watchtower. We always kind of wonder, what are those things? But that's what they are. Captain Atom is containing the leak, but tells Jean it was no accident. Listen, all y'all, it's a sabotage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or sabotage.
I was getting ready to say that.
You say sabotage, I say sabotage.
There you go.
The squad head toward the bridge with the Annihilator, but run into Atom Smasher, Shining Knight, and Vigilante, who know they are obviously up to no good. I was so excited to see these guys get some more screen time.
Yes.
I have always had a soft spot for the Seven Soldiers of Victory. I even made custom Migos of Vigilante and Shining Knight.
Yeah, and they're really good.
Well, thank you, yeah. Chris Cox voices both Captain Atom, having taken over George Eads late last season. He also voices Sir Justin the Shining Knight here for the first time, I believe, but he continues to play the character whenever he speaks.
Okay.
So he's a voice of both those characters. However, in this episode, Michael Rosenbaum also provides the voice of the Vigilante. That role will be taken over by Nathan Fillion in a few episodes.
Right.
And he'll be the voice of the Vigilante from then on. So, when Sir Justin makes a very obvious declarative statement that these violets are the source of all woes, Flag responds, "Can't slip anything past you."
Like, duh. Yeah.
I imagine somebody like Flag would have absolutely no time for some old English talking guy in antiquated knight armor.
Right.
You know, I mean, he'd be like, dude, what are you? What is this? Is this medieval times? I mean, right. Is this a Renaissance fair? What the hell? You know, like, it's just, come on, you know? While Adam Smasher battles the Annihilator, Deadshot fires at Sir Justin, who blocks the bullets with his magic sword, but then Vigilante shoots the guns out of Deadshot's hand.
Very nice.
Yeah, I like that. I do like that whenever Sir Justin's on here, his sword, which is magic like his armor, it seems heavy.
Yeah.
It's like it's a heavy, it's like a broadsword. I don't know if it's a broadsword, it's like a long sword, I guess. I'm not a sword expert, so you guys that are be like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. I'm sorry. But, I know a broadsword's like a big, huge thing, but it's heavy. It's got a heft to it. I mean, when it's not as bad as Mando trying to use the Darksaber.
Yeah.
But because he can actually use it, but it still shows that it's got heft to it, which I like. You know, after Vigilante shoots the guns out of Deadshot's hand, Boomerang disarms Vigilante, and everyone's very evenly matched.
Yes.
It's a really nice fight. It's one of the best in the series, I think. Everyone gets their moment, but ultimately Flag is a bruiser, like Boomer kind of hinted at, and he doesn't have time for Deadshot and Vigilante to play who's the fastest draw.
Right.
Because they both get to drop on each other at the same time, and because Deadshot gets one of Vigilante's guns, he's got the other one, but then Flag comes up behind Vigilante, tosses him in the wall until he just passes out. Shining Knight is trapped behind a door. Plastique locks him into via her confiscated ID card.
I want to know if Flag is not augmented in some way.
Hmm. In the comics, he's not that I know of.
But, I mean, he's working directly for Cadmus.
That's true.
I mean, I wonder if he's not augmented in some way for these different
Almost
missions.
Almost like a super soldier type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we see what happens later with that when they basically take the Captain Nazi formula, you know, and all that with the general and everything.
I know.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if there's not something going on there.
Now, I would have liked to have seen Batman take on Flag.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. Or maybe Wildcat.
Ooh.
Yeah, that would have been really good. Yeah. Annihilator throws Adam Smasher through the locked bridge doors, giving them access. He wasn't supposed to be on duty that day, which Boomerang pointed out. It's like, Adam Smasher, nobody told us about that bruiser. You know, something like that. But he ended up being more help to them than to the League because they just used him to open that door.
Yeah.
So, Jean goes all alien horror badass on them, too. Ask yourselves, is being in here with me what you truly desire? You know? So Deadshot fires at him with the guns he stole from Vigilante. Now, did he really think that would work? He already said, Jean, like, you know, because Clock King's like, he has flight and super strength. He's like, and he can read minds. And he can shapeshift, you know. So he knows Jean's...
all his little bag of tricks.
Yeah, so of course...
But again, he took Superman down with a grate.
That's right.
So, you know...
He got really lucky that day, yeah. Jean does that thing where he phases his hand through Deadshot's chest. What is he doing exactly?
Oh, he's giving him, like, some kind of...
Cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
Briefly, yeah. I mean...
Because, I mean, he holds his chest after he goes through, like, you know.
Yeah, he, like squeezes his heart or something.
Yeah,
he does something, yeah. He then dodges Plastique's explosions. He turns into that four-armed serpent thing he turns into, which must be some kind of Martian creature.
Thingy, yeah.
And I guess maybe it's kind of maybe a callback to John Carter of Mars, because the four-armed Martians.
Yeah.
And squeezes her until she passes out. He throws Boomer into Flag, and it looks like the squad is done. But the Annihilator grabs him, and as I said in the synopsis, literally rips him in two.
Uh-huh.
What? I remember gasping at this when I first saw it. Can he do that? Can Cartoon Network do that? I mean, you know.
But, I mean, thank goodness it was Jean and not somebody else.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
He can put himself back together. He reminded me of there was that toy in the 80s that Ideal put out. It called Manglores. And I think somebody's trying to bring those back right now. But the thing was they were supposed to be made out of this stuff that if you tore their arms off, you could put it back on. Tore them in two, you could put them back together. And my mom, who was very indulgent, took one look at that and go, yeah, there's no way that works. I'm not buying you that. And she was right. Apparently, that was like one of the biggest toy scams ever. kids ripped them apart, and they, I mean, they kind of, they were sticky enough that they'd hang on there for a few seconds and then pop back off.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. He just rips them in two like that, but fortunately, John can put himself back together. So, he isn't down for long. He recovers. He tells Green Lantern to return to the Watchtower. Annihilator runs at him, but John cuts loose and gives him a beatdown that sends him flying across the bridge. But Plastique quickly shifts the advantage. She threatens to place one of her explosive discs in the unconscious Atom Smasher's mouth, and her line is just, oh man, she's mean. She means business.
Back off, freak show, or the meat puppet eats it.
Dang. Meat puppet. Wow. I know. That's an extra large meat puppet. He's like, if he's a puppet, he's Sweetums from the Muppets.
You know? Oh,
he's
yeah. There you go.
Flag orders her up on the platform, and she sets the bomb for 30 seconds to distract Jean, but Captain Atom grabs her. Not very ladylike behavior, ma'am. I like that Captain Atom, it's the whole thing with Supergirl, put a stick in it, Corporal.
Yeah.
That's Captain. You know, it's just, he's that. I mean, he's almost like, you know, superpowered Gomer Pyle in some ways or some, on here, but not, I mean, he's not a goofball, but you know what I mean. In the struggle, the explosive, superpowered Forrest Gump.
There you go.
That I got. But in the struggle, the explosive flies out of her hand, and Deadshot shoots it, saying, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
After all that flirting, Deadshot is willing to kill her without a second thought.
That's cold.
I mean, yeah, damn. That is. Yeah, it really is. The explosion goes off as the squad men and the Annihilator escape via the transporter. When the smoke clears, Captain Atom is...
No, he's not standing over her battered body. He covered her.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, I shouldn't say standing. He's laying over her.
Yes, he covered her. He tried to save her.
Yeah. We don't see her face, but she's groaning in pain. And I noticed she's not moving.
She's twitching.
Is she moving at all?
I thought she was twitching.
I thought she was at first, but when I look back, I think just because you hear her moaning, you think she's switching.
Yeah.
I wonder if they didn't change the dialogue to kind of say, okay, she's not dead.
Right.
But Captain Atom is shocked by what he sees. Jean tells him to tend to her, so they would probably have had to add that line. I should have went back and looked to see exactly if his mouth moves when he says that or, you know, right or something, but... either way, I don't know. Hey guys, Chris here, dropping in during the editing. I went back and looked at the episode, and Plastique does not move. Her body does not move. You hear her groaning. Of course, that means she's alive, but she's not moving. Her clothes kind of move, but I think that's more because Captain Atom's being animated around her. And it looks like Jean, his mouth moves when he says tend to her, so... I don't know if the intention was originally to make it look like she was definitely dead or what. I guess he could say tend to her either way. They weren't sure, but she's not moving at all. So it's up for debate whether she survives this or not. And Jean tries to recall where the transporter went, but the panel short circuits, and he says they thought of everything. And they did.
Yeah.
Indeed, they did. Back at the LexCorp warehouse, Flag in dress uniform, I might add, and the others wait. Waller and Tala arrive. Waller is a bit dubious about how useful the Annihilator will be, but Tala assures her that it will be very useful. So, she comments on Plastique, and Flag tells her she'll have a report by 0800. He starts to leave, and she tells him, Rick, you're a good soldier. Your father would be proud. And she actually smiles at him.
Which is creepy.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. So, I like that they're bringing in that comic history.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's like, did she know his dad? I mean, in the comics, I don't think she did. But, you know, she knows of him anyway. Flag walks out, and Deadshot, Boomer, and Clock King follow. Deadshot goes to walk away, but Flag grabs him and punches him in the gut. He tells him they've got him for 5 years. If he survives, he'll go free. If you don't like it, there's a nice warm seat waiting for you back at Bell Rev Correctional. And Bell Rev was where the squad was headquartered in the classic Ostrander run.
Oh, okay.
So do you think Flag punched him for what he did with Plastique with no remorse, or just to teach him that they owned him, or both?
I think it's a column A, column B situation.
Yeah. He knows that, I mean, even though Boomerang's a weasel, that Deadshot's even worse, you know. So... Deadshot asks what Waller has on him, and he says, not a thing. Some of us don't have to be blackmailed into serving our country. I like that there's no dirt. Flag is a soldier who follows orders, We don't even know if he agrees with Cadmus, that he has a beef with the Justice League. It's not personal. I mean, he's a weapon that they point and they pull the trigger and he's the bullet, you know, basically.
Well, Captain Atom.
I know. Well, I was going to say, sadly, this is the last we'll see of all these characters except Boomerang. I think Flag could have been an interesting character to go with in the Cadmus arc, but I think maybe another character in this episode kind of fills the role I'd expect Flag to.
Yeah.
Without getting into too many spoilers for folks who haven't watched this.
Oops, okay.
Then we find out something I totally forgot about. The curly-headed blonde tech named Vance was the inside man for Cadmus. Jean only knew because he couldn't read his thoughts. Cadmus gave him the ability to shield his thoughts from Jean.
Again, which is why I think that Rick Flag has some kind of augmentation.
Well, you think about this, though. Jean used his powers to read the minds of everybody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the past, he wouldn't do that. You know, yeah. He didn't like to invade people's thoughts.
Privacy, yeah.
Yeah, but here he's apparently, you know, you're on the payroll. I'm going to mind read you. Jill asked what they were going to do with him, and shockingly, Jean says, I'd like to go in there and wipe clean the last 2 years of his memory. Whoa, what do you think about that?
I mean, dang. I mean, Jean's supposed to be the touchy-feely one. No.
Yeah, I know. Last episode, they banished Doomsday to the Phantom Zone without, like, as Dan, our guest Dan Greenfield pointed out, no judge or jury.
Yeah.
They just played basically executioner, or sentencer anyway. This episode, they are considering mind-wiping a person.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. GL thinks that's a little harsh, but Jean calls him a liability. Green Lantern figures he spilled everything he knows to Cadmus by now, and Jean angrily answers, don't you understand? We can't trust him. And Carl Lumley really delivers how upset and desperate Jean is here.
Yeah.
I mean, he comes across as he is pissed. I mean, like, he is, more upset than we've heard him on this show. Then Green Lantern brings it home. Jean, we can't trust anyone now.
Yeah.
And we close with them standing in the hallway, surrounded by the chattering of the workforce they will now be suspect of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's very haunting. I was thinking we saw Plastique again at the end of this episode, but we don't. So, what do you think? Did she die horribly disfigured or maimed? Or
I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't either. Either way, it's not good. So, crazy comic fact. In the 1980s Captain Atom series, Plastique reforms, and the two get engaged and eventually married. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It doesn't last, but clearly the writers are pointing to that here,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what did you think of this one?
I mean, we root for the bad guys just because of the, what they're up against and everything else. And
like we said, we can see their point, and the Justice League continues to act in ways that call into question, okay, what are you guys doing,
Right.
What are you thinking? I mean, in their defense, I understand why they're going in those places, but we expect them to be like, oh, well, they wouldn't do that, but they're considering it.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, they've done it,
Right.
And you can argue, well, the Phantom Zone, that's the best place to put Doomsday, but the fact that they made the decision with no input from anybody else, they've literally placed themselves above the law,
Yep.
So, and, going in and mind-wiping this guy, I mean, again, not to get into a comic series that I don't care for, but an identity crisis, they mind-wiped Dr. Light and Batman,
yeah.
After that awful incident. So, I mean, it just, makes you wonder, I love the shades of gray we're seeing. It's so well done. It works. And like we said, they've earned this.
Yes, they have.
We've seen the Justice League as this paragons of virtue for 3 seasons now, really. 2 seasons of Justice League and 1 of Justice League Unlimited. So now you can play with these things. You can earn that little bit of deconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Make it to where, well, maybe we don't agree with the Justice League.
On everything
in this episode. It's very difficult to pull off, but in my opinion, the crew here just keeps nailing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go into our superlatives here.
Power action feature.
For power action feature, what did you have?
Oh, gosh. Maybe where Plastique is willing to put that disc in his mouth. In Adam Smasher's mouth.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's, I mean, because he's, I mean, it's, and just to think somebody, you're unconscious, somebody puts a bomb down your throat.
Yeah.
I mean, geez. You know, again, you picked a villain doing it. I mean, this episode is from the villain's point of view.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a villain POV episode, which is very unusual. That's the only time we really get that on this show. Oh, well, it's the first time. Next season, we'll get some episodes like that. We get a whole episode like that. Again, but it seems weird to pick another one, but I think, you know, when the Annihilator rips Jean in half.
Yeah.
I mean, holy cow. Again, like one of those Mangalores. It's crazy.
Rotating chairperson.
So who'd you have for rotating chairperson?
I'd honestly say maybe the Clock King.
Oh, really?
Because it was, okay, this is what it is. This, you know, there is no room for error. He's like, this is the job. This is what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, if you're talking about the League, I guess you go with Jean, but if you stick to the villain aspect, I'd go with Flag. But I can see Clock King.
But see, I mean, Clock King, there was no emotion at all. It was purely, you do this here, this here, this here.
Well, like the Clock King always was, yeah.
But I'm saying, you know, there's no morality, you know. No. He's like, nope, this is what it is. If you got to kill 20 people to get the job done, doesn't matter.
Well, don't kill 20 people, though, because it's messy, and we don't have time for that.
That's what I'm saying,
Justice League Communicator.
Justice League Communicator, this is tough, because there are so many great lines in this one. What do you think? What was your favorite?
Oh, I mean, I think when, again, going back to Plastique, that's all you're going to see.
Yeah.
You know?
Floyd Lawton, a.k.a. Deadshot. Meet Task Force X. George Harkness, a.k.a. Captain Boomerang, expert thief and inventor. Temple Fugit, the Clock King. Planner, tactician, expert with locks and systems infiltration. And Betty Sanssouci, current alias Plastique, explosives expert.
I know. I've seen the pictures.
And that's all you're gonna see, killer.
But she flirts with him almost more. She's into flirting with him, too.
Well, I think she's just a flirt, but she ain't going to come across either.
Maybe, yeah. I think the last exchange with Jean and Green Lantern is another real clincher. We are in deep this season.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff is going to get way worse before it gets better. There's so many great exchanges and lines and so many fun lines in this one. But, you know, if we're talking about how it affects the series, I mean, that really hammers home where we're at with the Justice League.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, obviously this episode owes a lot to John Ostrander's Suicide Squad run. And like we said, there's the Captain Atom, Plastique connection too. There's the, like we said, the Annihilator is, you know, that's the guys bringing in more of a Marvel thing in with the Destroyer type armor. And as, I forgot who it was that pointed it out. Maybe it was Liz Ann Oswald. I forgot who it was that said the Annihilator armor kind of looks like Monarch's armor. And that was introduced in the Hawk and Dove episode.
Oh, okay.
And oddly enough, Captain Atom was supposed to be Monarch, but, you know, they leaked and they made it Hawk, which made absolutely no damn sense.
Electricity is evil.
Electricity is evil. The transporter panel fizzles out, but I think that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's more explosions, not electricity. So I think that'll wrap this episode up.
Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FW Podcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horse Club Podcast, David Capoon, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast. I think one of you needs to tell Jean that not only did the squad steal the Annihilator, they raided his Oreo stash. You pick which one. Good luck.
Next time, the saga of the Annihilator continues with an episode that may finally heal some old wounds. Join us for The Balance.
Yes, please do. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Oh, and be sure to leave a comment about what you saw in the Justice League Vault at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Leave us comments, please.
Hint, hint, subtle, subtle.
Yeah, bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
How did you know Vance was the inside man?
He was the only one on the tower whose mind I couldn't read. Cadmus must have supplied him with a sophisticated method of masking his thoughts.
So, what do we do with him now?
I'd like to go in there and wipe clean the last 2 years of his memory.
Whoa, that's a little harsh, don't you think?
He's a liability.
I'm sure he's already spilled everything he knows to Cadmus.
Don't you understand? We can't trust him.
Jean, we can't trust anyone now.
Colonel Rick Flag interrupts
Floyd. Yes. Andy, I'm going to shoot you with this bullet. Oh, yes. I'm the greatest shot in Mayberry, yes.